Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. So glad you can join me where I am every week right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audioboom and iTunes. Support for this program comes from Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 28th, TPC River Highlands, TravelersChampionship.com for more information. Well, the U.S. Open at Shinnecock is in the books. The winners? Wyndham Clark and the USGA, the United States Golf Association. I wrote a piece in Dan's papers about the three storylines that left the biggest impression. Certainly Wyndham Clark, overcoming so much adversity, the difficult course, the conditions, a six-shot lead to begin the final round that quickly dwindled with his three bogeys on the front, playing with number one Scottie Scheffler, the pressure of that, Sam Burns breathing down his neck, the heckling and bad behavior from some fans, several of whom were thrown out, as they should have been, and battling his own demons of the past. I am impressed with Wyndham Clark and how he handled all of this on and off the course. I'm glad he pulled out the win, edging Sam Burns by one. And it was dramatic down the stretch for sure. And I thought his openness after the win, sharing that he had dark days last year after what happened at Oakmont, showed true honesty and maturity. His victory was about far more than golf. It was about redemption, proving to himself that he could rally back from the really negative, dark place, as he admitted, that he was in, feeling that his career, world ranking, reputation, and everything was dwindling, as he shared afterwards. Now, he is a two-time U.S. Open champion, and that speaks for itself. And congratulations to the USGA for all the effort and success of putting on the championship. They were most transparent and careful to let Shinnecock be Shinnecock. They were also very deliberate and public about how they were going to handle the dry and firm greens, even to the point of telling the players the speed that the greens would play in for the weekend. Keith Stewart, a PGA professional and the mastermind behind his media platform, Read the Lines, will join me this hour, and we'll take a deep dive looking back at the U.S. Open. We'll also talk a bit about the new PGA Tour competitive model, which will be implemented in 2028. CEO and newly named commissioner of the PGA Tour, Brian Rolapp. He was at the Travelers Championship early in the week, along with Tiger Woods. Yes, Tiger made a brief appearance to discuss the Championship Series and the Challengers Series, all in the new model. We can talk more in detail about it in the future. There's a lot to digest, but overall, I think it offers many exciting changes for the PGA Tour and, most importantly, for golf fans. And then Kelly Brook, our PGA Professional of the Year and owner of Brook Management Group, who recently purchased Pine Ridge Golf Course in Quorum, New York, and they manage Harbor Links, Montauk Downs, and of course, Bethpage. Kelly will join me, and like me, Kelly Brook disagrees with the harsh criticism Long Island is suffering in the golf media for the minority of guys who acted like idiots by heckling Wyndham Clark at Shinnecock Hills. All that and more in this edition of Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. And it is my pleasure to reconnect with Keith Stewart, who operates the media brand called Read the Lines. Keith is also a PGA professional. He's been on many times. It's good to have you back. Welcome, Keith.
And it's great to be with you. Every year, it seems like we reconnect here at the Travelers. What a fantastic event, a signature series event in time for hopefully I'll give you a signature interview.
Okay. Well, since you brought up, I want to talk about the U.S. Open last week. Let's do that first, and then we'll kind of ease into the Travelers, which it's the last signature event on the calendar. But you were at the U.S. Open last week, Shinnecock Hills, Southampton, New York. What were your overall thoughts about the U.S. Open?
I thought it was a fantastic championship. I thought it was interesting in many ways. If you point out so many of the like the details of the storylines, but for me, the overarching theme is it was success for the USGA. It was a success, obviously, for Wyndham Clark. It was a great success for golf. You know, golf has put itself in such an interesting position nowadays with the four major championships being these like huge tentpole events, and they have to be wins. And the PGA Championship was obviously at Aronimink, like a really good event for them, kind of like shifted the tides away from the talk of Bethpage Black. The Masters, thank you for running the Masters, Augusta National. Every year it's a home run. So now the pressure all fell on the USGA going back to a place where at times there aren't some good memories there at Shinnecock Hills. And they went to Southampton this time and they got a great champion. They had a great event and they took sensational advantage of a great golf course.
Did you agree with everything the USGA did? They were very transparent about letting Shinnecock be Shinnecock. And a lot of people thought the greens could have been faster, but it's tough. You can't please everybody.
As a PGA professional, I'm definitely going to err on the traditionalist side, maybe be a little more conservative when it comes to running tournaments. I've run thousands of tournaments in my career. I think as a society, we're a little bit too much into oversharing. Like, I'm not a big fan of like turning on TikTok and seeing other people sharing their meals, right? I didn't need to know the green speed. I don't think that the players needed to know that. I think if there was going to be substantial changes to the golf course, then they needed to say something. But so much of the State of the Union address that Mike Wann gave, to me, for the USGA, if there was one moment during the week where they didn't really shine, and maybe they were taking a look at the big picture, you know, and kind of the pulse of the nation, how popular golf is. But that would be the one area where I would have said, geez, the rollback and all of this. Like, you have this massive championship, this huge opportunity, Scotty turning 30 on Sunday, career Grand Slam, Rory's here. Like, at the start of the week when they spoke, all of that talk about the, you know, how they were going to take care of the golf course and everything, all of it seemed a little bit too preemptive. And I think as a golf professional, I would have let that play out more. Again, if they were going to make substantial changes to what was going on, to the playability of the U.S. Open. But, you know, I think back to Oakmont, they weren't worried about the green speeds were going to be off the charts. They weren't worried about telling players. The rough was super rough at Oakmont. They weren't worried about telling the players. It seems to me like with this venue, there was just like too much talk, which, as you know, you're a member of the Golf Media Center, as I am. You're just giving them too much food, you know, for fodder. And I think I would have played it a little more tighter to the hip. The players, they generally complain when you give them things to complain about. If they gave them a little less and said, go play, I think they would have figured it out. And I think they could have gotten away with more. It's not a complaint. Maybe it's just, you know, put it in the suggestion box for the future.
Well, I definitely think the USGA really reacted based on all the criticism that the organization got based on the 2004 US Open and the 2018 US Open. And they just really went out of their way to be very deliberate, to be very transparent, because they did not want to go anywhere near any kind of controversy. Now, you bring up a good point, you know, will that change in the future now because they did it here at the, you know, at Shinnecock? Will they be talking about the stint meter, you know, the speed of the greens at Pebble Beach next year? But I just think because it was Shinnecock and maybe they had to do it based on, you know, pleasing the members, who knows? But for whatever reason, and I think it was mostly because of their history at Shinnecock, they felt that they had to be very deliberate and very transparent.
I'll say this much. There have been many times we've all accused the USGA of being like up in the ivory tower and kind of like this protected group. And what are you doing? And are you reading the room? That Wednesday press conference was a different set of circumstances for them. It was a different message. 20 plus years of them working on this ball rollback only to say kind of like, to take a step back. I mean, that to me, if that's a sign of the times going forward, and they want to give the players more of a conditional breakdown heading into the U.S. Open to try to be better friends with the players, I guess all of those things are good things. I'm not necessarily complaining. I just thought it stood out in my mind. I wasn't sure if it was necessary. Now, overall, the management of the championship, I thought it went very, very well. You're dealing with some super challenging situations just from a logistics point of view. Before people even get to the golf course, let alone the players play it, I mean, that place it's a destination. It's not a rest stop alongside of the highway. I mean, it's a destination. It's tough to get to. And I think they did a good job of like trying to manage that as much as they could. And when Mike Wan was joking about like, hey, thanks so much for like bearing with us through all this, like that part I'm okay with. But like going to the players every day and say, hey, we're going to change this way and everything. I mean, let the guys roll with it. It's the national championship. Everybody wants it to be brutal, but then they don't want it to be too brutal. I mean, like at a place like Shinnecock, where you don't know what the weather's going to bring, that's a pretty tough thing to do. Did they go too far in 18 and 04? Absolutely. That's not what I'm saying. But going forward, I think they can go back to, you know, a little bit more of their DNA and have some fun with Pebble Beach next year. I think that kind of the ethos of what they found recently with that 2-4 under winning score, I think that's a good winning score, and I think it gives everyone a competitive championship.
Do you think the greens were too slow?
No, because it was too windy. Mm-hmm. I don't. What I'm saying is that they don't need to come out and tell the players, you know, all of that information. Mm-hmm. They could just run the tournament. Right. You know, so we're all sitting here, you know, getting ready to cover the Travelers this week, and it's raining a ton and it's going to play soft. And the golf course is going to play different than it would if it was dry. And, you know, the PGA Tour officials aren't going out to the players and saying, hey, this is going to be different. That's what practice rounds are for. Go figure it out, guys. And if the wind or something changes, I mean, that's the beauty of our game. It's not a basketball game inside of an arena or a hockey rink or something like that. You know, it's played outdoors. There are going to be conditions that affect the way that, you know, how the tournament turns out. I like to see a little bit more of that.
Right. I think they definitely were being cautious because it is historic Shinnecock because of the past experiences there. And you're right, though. It might set a precedent that might not be good for the game.
Well, now they've given themselves something they have to live up to. All right. In one sense, they're saying, hey, we're going to pull back on the rollback. On another sense, they added all this information to the delivery of the championship. So when you go to Pebble Beach next year, do you want to do that again? They've kind of said that they would. And now you've opened yourself up to more criticism. So again, and people might say, you know, like, Keith, you're being too much of a traditionalist. We want all this information. We want mic'd up caddies. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is that like they set this precedent. Good luck the rest of the way.
Another point there when you're talking about the rollback, and I remember asking, you know, Mike Wan last year at Oakmont, because it was getting so much criticism from the PGA and the PGA Tour, are they set on their position? And he kind of snapped back at me, and we're friendly. He said, yes, it's done. And then this year, they completely changed their tune.
Well, it seems obvious to you and I that not everyone was on board. You know, I think that some of the allied associations were maybe like the RNA who helped develop it, but the PGA of America was not on board.
Right.
We didn't want to roll back. Obviously, the PGA Tour players were not on board. We've heard all sorts of anecdotal like commentary on that, different players just saying like, yeah, that's crazy. I don't know why we would do that. And then, of course, I think the nail in the coffin was when they didn't do their R&D correctly, that when a player like Cameron Young starts testing the ball and he finds out he hits it further and better and starts playing really good golf, and he's like, yeah, you can run with that ball. I just hit it 375 in the biggest moment of my career under the most amount of pressure on a golf course that wasn't nearly as firm and fast as Shinnecock. And you're like, oh boy, what did we, I mean, I think that had a lot to do with it too. Not just the player feedback, but the player performance.
You're a New Jersey guy. I'm originally from the Midwest, moved to New York City, bought on the east end of Long Island. Did it offend you when Eamon Lynch on the Golf Channel said, you know, what he said about Long Island crowds and the fact that Bethpage should not host another major championship?
Well, this might come as a shock to you, Anne, but social media has a little bit of a recency bias from time to time, right? Okay. And Bethpage, we all know, is out of control. right? It was a mismanaged situation. Too many people in there, could not get to see the golf. They become overserved. They became very hostile and were getting killed. Again, a big disparity, nothing to really watch from a competitive perspective. So people's interests go to other areas. This tends to be negative areas. Now, Shinnecock having the same sort of reaction. Unfortunately, I think we see it in a lot of sports. I think it'd be tough for me just to pick on Long Island. There have been other instances. I mean, you went to Harbortown, to Hilton Head. This is like this beautiful resort in the low country, and everyone's yelling USA versus, you know, booing Europe and Matt Fitzpatrick when it was Scottie Scheffler. I think in general, the world, because they've been able to on social media try to criticize anything with some form of anonymity, and I'm not going to try again, but you know what I meant. Yeah. But I think it's kind of that's now seeping into like fandom. Yeah. And the public and airports and all of these things. And there's a lot of stresses on people.
Look at the Phoenix Open. They encourage that behavior on that one hole. So it's not a Long Island issue. And I took exception to what Eamon Lynch said, for sure.
I think at times Eamon loves a good clickbait comment. And, you know, he got you with that one. He got you with that one.
I shouldn't even be defending Long Island because I grew up in a small town in Ohio. All right, let's talk about what was announced on the Tuesday of Travelers Championship Week when Brian Rolopp, who is not only the CEO now of the PGA Tour, but also the commissioner, he talked about his championship competitive model that will start in 2028. And there's a lot of nuances to it. But overall, what are your general thoughts about the fact that it's going to be two-tiered, the championship series from February to August? So they're really condensing the schedule, 23 to 24 events, match play in the post, 120 players in the field average, 72 hole stroke play. They'll have a 36 hole cut, thank goodness, with purses at 20 million. And then we can talk a little bit about the Challengers series as well, which is the second tier. But overall, what are your thoughts about this new competitive model, which will begin in 2028?
I love this. I think that we all know LIV caused a lot of reactionary moves by the tour. I think the tour was a little bit of a mess. It needed to be streamlined. I think that there was a lot of things that needed to be cleaned up. I think that there were some great ideas in there, but I think overall they just kept on like adding parts, right? And at some point it was time to tear the house down and like build a new house. And I think that they've done that. I think they've given us more meaningful events, Anne, is what it comes down to, because the PGA Tour was riding this roller coaster of, you know, is this a regular season event? Is it a signature event? What do the points mean? The fans were confused. Who was going to show up at which event? Who was allowed to show up at which event? What did your status mean? All of these things. And then all of a sudden it dropped down to the Korn Ferry, which people weren't watching. And I know those tournaments, it's a developmental tour. And it's important to the whole ecosystem, but those are not meaningful events. And I'll speak primarily from like my perspective or my lens, which is a wagering lens. You know, what does my audience want to hear about? They want events that are like high level DP World Tour events. They want, you know, the majors for the LPGA. They want coverage of all of the men's events that mean something. They have given us more meaningful events within the season. And they've given us a structure that helps us understand how people move up and they come back down. And that has made things like the English Premier League soccer very, very successful. And we're used to all the time, like guys bouncing back and forth and everything. Yeah, you win twice. Now you can go from the Challenger Series, right? The track two to track one. That's awesome. If you get the Aaron Rye rule, if you win a major and you're in, you know, the Challenger Series, you go to the Championship Series. Like they are thinking about this in a thoughtful manner, but overall, we want the Super Tour, but we also want the developmental tour to be an event that I want to cover, especially if there's a week off. And right now, the secondary events like Puerto Rico or Myrtle Beach, and you know, they're all great events, but they haven't been as meaningful as they could be. And I think that that's where this is going. I mean, I know that's where this is going, and I think it's really, really cool. And I also think that they're leaning into, from what they were talking about today, more of pop culture golf. More of YouTube golf. When they start to talk about there's going to be a regular season champion, then it's over. Okay, it's Scotty in that year probably, right? Scotty or Rory, they're the best players. It's those guys, right? And then we get to that Tour Championship Series in the playoffs. They're talking about doing some really cool things. Two events, maybe, you know, a stroke play qualifying, and then the next one's a match play. And they're throwing out crazy places like Pine Valley, like Bandon Dunes, like a made-for-TV event, like 16 guys get in, they're going to play matches. Like, if they're thinking that way, then they're thinking the way that your listeners are thinking, which is like, we want kind of this bridge between the cool things we're seeing on YouTube and kind of the stoic things we're seeing on the PGA Tour. And looks like they're going to mix some of that up. So I'm super bullish on all of this. I think that in my world, we're getting more meaningful tournaments. They're truncating the schedule. And when you want to pay attention, you're going to get the best golf you can to see on TV.
Yeah, I love the match play aspect, you know, as far as the tour championship goes. What do you think about Rory McIlroy calling the new Track 2 system glorified Korn Ferry events? He said that at the U.S. Open last week.
Well, it's funny, you know, you bring that up, and then I think it was, you know, Hall of Famer Doug Ferguson. That was his first question for Brian in the press room. Rory had a... He made a press release this morning about how he kind of retracted some of that. So I guess he and Brian did talk on the phone, as Brian mentioned. And that press release very much kind of dictated where, hey, Rory, don't say that.
Right.
You know, that these are going to be meaningful events. I mean, you could look at it any way you want. But a Korn Ferry Tour event is a purse of about $1.5 million. These are $4 million events. That's more than double, right? It's more than the LPGA plays for. These are going to be meaningful events, and they're going to have a lot of Joel Damons and Keith Mitchells. And, well, maybe not Keith, because Keith played so great.
Sure.
But, like, there's going to be a lot of names that are going to be on this Challenger Series tour. And think back a couple years ago, like when JT didn't make the playoffs, or when, you know, Jordan Spieth was injured and Ricky Fowler kind of went into his slump. One of those guys is going to end up down on that Challenger Series. And imagine those storylines. Imagine that documentary filming him for a season trying to fight his way back up. You know, like, those are the types of things I think that the PGA Tour kind of senses they can look into. And there's going to be really compelling stories on that Challenger Series tour, which is why I believe it's going to be meaningful.
Absolutely. And just to mention the six players who are on that nine-member Futures Competition Committee, Patrick Cantlay, Keith Mitchell, who you mentioned, Adam Scott, Vajegas, Tiger, who made the appearance today. Were you surprised to see Tiger today at this press conference?
After I thought about it, no. But when he walked in the room, I'm a massive Tiger fan. You know, I worked at Isleworth for 5 years when Tiger was there. And, you know, being around him every day when he was on property, becoming friends with him and everything. It's like to see him, and he looked good this morning, you know, to me, that was a home run. You know, at first I was surprised, but I was like, oh no, he should be here. It's just like, we've kind of conditioned ourselves that he's like so secretive and everything. It just generally surprises us whenever we see him nowadays.
Well, it was his first public appearance since his DUI in March down in Florida. So it was good to see him back from rehab from Switzerland. And, you know, he looks good, which is, and, you know, he kind of bolted right after the press conference, didn't talk beyond that. But it's good to see that, you know, he's still going to be involved, obviously, major involved, right, with this this whole competitive schedule in 2028.
Will he be involved, right? As I put air quotes up, at the time that he had his misstep back that you just spoke about, let's see, the Champs Tour wanted him to play. He had recently signed up for the U.S. Senior Open. They wanted him to play the Masters. Fred Ridley needed him to open, you know, the park down there. You know, we were thinking about he might be our Ryder Cup captain. What am I on, five now? Ryder Cup captain. You know, he was the chairman of the FCC committee. I mean, like, how many more things do we depend on for Tiger Woods? Maybe it's good that he had a break. He needed a break. He got a break. And we've moved on. And maybe we could pull some of those things back and just let Tiger be Tiger, which is, I think, all anyone really wants.
Let Shinnecock be Shinnecock, let Tiger be Tiger for sure. All right, let's move to the Travelers. It's the last signature event on the PGA Tour schedule. I can't believe it. It's gone so fast. Who are you picking this week?
Top of the board, Colin Morikawa. Yep. New baby. Kind of took some time off. I don't think the injury's bothering him anymore.
He played well last week, for sure. He was in contention. He was right there for a while.
Absolutely. There was a lot of question marks in my world surrounding him after the Players. And then he was playing hurt through the Masters, through the Heritage. He had some great top tens there. And then all of a sudden, he kind of drifted off, and it was like, well, maybe he is really injured. But no, it turns out he He was just having a baby. Well, that's fantastic for him. You know, so now we got the baby swag and he's back. But the things you need to do here to really play well at TPC River Highlands, which is what everyone's always coming after, but why I'm on site at Read the Line and why we're covering this, is that we know the conditions are going to be soft. All right. We know what the average approach length is. It's, you know, shots right around 150 yards. Who are the best players in the field at that? Because whatever they throw at these greens are going to be dartboards based upon all the rain that you and I have seen the last couple of days up here. Colin Morikawa is great at that. You also have to be really good at hitting fairways. This particular tournament has a huge penalty for missing the fairway. Not necessarily because, like TPC Sawgrass, you're going to hit it in the water, but because if you do hit it in the rough, you make par. And everyone else, if they hit the fairway, they have really legitimate birdie chances. If you're getting to 20 under par, think about it. You're only playing 72 holes. You probably need like 36 birdie chances to make 25 birdies. So like you miss the fairway, your penalty is like you're almost a stroke behind the guys that do hit the fairway because they're hitting wedges in on these greens. And then you got to roll the rock, you know, and these greens are going to be a lot smoother. They're going to be quite different than what they're flatter than what they saw last week. I think if a guy was an average putter last week, maybe even a poor putter last week, you know, a second guy I think about is Sahith Theegala. You know, Sahith, you know, famously lost the lead here a couple years ago when Xander Schauffele won, but Sahith's been good on Pete Dye golf courses. This is a famous Pete Dye track. He was number one tee to green last week at the US Open, and then he was horrible with the putter. But he's had good history here. He could putt good. That's all you need to have happen. The ball striking is great. Maybe Colin, maybe Sahith. Those are the places. Those are the two guys that have the most interest in my budget.
No Scotty Scheffler. 0-7 in signature events this year. You're not picking Scotty, huh?
Well, the one thing that he really needs to do is to hit his irons closer to the pin and make more putts. And those are things that the irons have been trending since the Masters, but the putter is still back at that state where, remember when Rory said, you know, like he should try a mallet putter. And then all of a sudden he went nuclear and started winning like, you know, 27 events and like in 30 tries. I mean, Scotty could win any week, but he just hasn't lately. So the fact that he's frustrated and his odds are always so short and it makes everyone's odds longer, I love that. You know, I get more value on Colin. I'm happy for that. And Scotty, you're more than welcome to take second.
Very good, Keith Stewart of Read the Lines. Always so much fun to visit with you. I wish we could keep going, but it's already a 30-minute interview, so we'll kind of close it out. Any last remarks here?
And it's always great to spend time with you. You know, we've known each other for such a tremendous amount of time. And I just thank you for all you do to continue to push the game of golf. As a PGA professional here in the Met City area, you have done it for decades, and very few have done it better. Thank you.
Thank you. That was very sweet of you. Thank you. Top 50 teacher, one of the top 50 teachers of the LPGA 2026-27. I mean, Kelly, your resume could take me hours to just describe, but you are a businesswoman extraordinaire. You own the Brook Management Group, CEO and president. It's a New York-based golf operations company and owner and director of the Golf Channel Academy at Bethpage Golf Course. You have resumed management of Pine Ridge Golf Course in Coram, New York. That's the latest news. But before we get into all of that, we just finished with the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. And I am so curious to get your comments about the week. We'll get into a little detail in a second, but just overall your thoughts about the U.S. Open right on Long Island at Shinnecock Hills.
Well, I mean, I think it was amazing. I think the USGA got it completely right this time. I thought the conditions were very fair the first couple days. They had some really big challenges. I mean, that wind on Saturday, I guess it was unbearable. And they really saved the course. I mean, remember last time around, they burnt out the greens. It was very unfair. This time around, I thought they really got it. They got it to a point where, you know, people were scoring. but not overly scoring. After the first couple of days, only a few people were under par. So that was wonderful. And then I thought the finish was super exciting. It was, you know, you never want to see someone making bogeys coming in, but I was happy as a spectator because it did kind of come down to the last couple of holes. So that was a very exciting finish, and you always want that in a major championship.
How about Wyndham Clark being able to really withstand all that commotion that was going on? And, you know, I was so impressed with him. I can't tell you he was one of my favorites. With all the stuff that happened in the past, I covered his U.S. Open at the L.A. Country Club, and I was so thrilled that he won there in 2023. He dedicated that win to his mother, who passed away of cancer when he was only 19. So I love that story. But then beyond that, you know, he kind of did a nosedive with, you know, trashing the locker at Oakmont and throwing the club at the sign at the PGA Championship. Last year. And it was one thing after another. But I really do think, Kelly, he rebounded on and off the course. I mean, to have handled all the commotion, all the hecklers, nobody rooting for him, and to really pull it out, winning by one shot. And then the way he handled it in the interview rooms and just, you know, he really opened up and, you know, apologized again and said, I just hope I can get my fans back. And he's really grown from that point. I mean, it was just, there was so much drama in all of that. And I just thought, you know, he really handled it well. And I was happy that he was able to edge out that win over Sam Burns by one.
Absolutely. You know, he has come a tremendous long way. What I found interesting as a swing coach, especially, is that when he was warming up before the last round, he was standing on the range line, not with his swing coach, but with his mental coach. He's grown a tremendous amount in the last couple of years. You know, all of our anger gets the best of us sometimes. Unfortunately, he's on a national stage and he'd made some wrong moves. You know, he's mentally tough, though. If I had made those moves and I was criticized by the world after trashing the locker room, I don't know that I could have come back from that. I would have been so embarrassed. I would have crawled into a hole. I probably would have quit golf. But he has come a long way. He has seen adversity. We all have seen adversity in our lives. You don't get to, you know, our age. I'm older than him, obviously, you are too. But, you know, you don't get into your 30s and 40s without having some sort of issues in your life or some sort of adversity. It's all how you handle it. You know, unfortunately for him, he didn't get a lot of crowd support because of his past. He was able to somehow block it out. I don't know how he did it. I would have been a mental case. I would have been in tears at some point. So I give him a tremendous, tremendous amount of credit for withstanding the crowd, withstanding the conditions. Holding a lead for four straight days is not an easy task. I was just so proud of him, and I'm happy for him.
Kelly, I know you are a tremendous businesswoman and run this Brooke Management Group, and your courses and clubs are on Long Island, right? Pine Ridge Golf Course, Harbor Links, Montauk Downs, Lido Beach.
Bethpage Black.
And then, of course, Bethpage Black. So Eamon Lynch of Golf Channel recently said, in quotes, Long Island golf fans are a problem, and the area should not be allowed to host a major championship. He thinks the PGA should move the 2033 PGA Championship away from Bethpage Black. What are your thoughts about his comments?
I mean, I have so much to say about this. You know, I'm not a native Long Islander. I grew up in Iowa, but I've been here long enough. I have so much to say. First of all, I own the Bethpage Black Pro Shop. Last week, we had record sales in that Pro Shop because of people going from airports or Manhattan or wherever they're coming from. There's only one way into the Hamptons to Shinnecock. The people that were coming through that Pro Shop were not Long Islanders. They were all foreigners. They're from other parts of the country. How in the world does Eamon know that it was Long Islanders who were heckling him? He has absolutely no idea that it was Long Islanders. It could have been anybody. Believe me, Long Islanders didn't go to that golf tournament. First of all, most Long Islanders are middle class and they can't afford to go to that golf tournament. So how in the world can he blame Long Islanders? How can he blame Long Islanders for the Ryder Cup? First of all, at the Ryder Cup, there are only maybe five people that were making all of the noise. Same thing, I think, at the U.S. Open. It was just a handful of people that were very loud. You know what? And the game has changed a tremendous amount. It is unfortunate. I think the USGA did a fantastic job of handling it. They are the governing body in golf. They set the tone. They're all about sportsmanship. I think they did the right thing. I am all for removing troublemakers from golf tournaments. You know, we grew up in the purest of all pure sports. It's not so pure anymore, unfortunately. The people that were doing the heckling, I would gather to say they're not real golfers. They're probably looky-loos who came in and they were just there for the day and they got a few drinks in them. And, you know, with social media the way it is, they're probably trying to get their clip to go viral, most likely with the heckling. But again, the USGA shut it down. And I think the PGA of America and the PGA Tour is going to probably follow this and try to get some control over it. And I think they can reverse it very quickly. If you're paying $1,000 to get into a golf tournament, and you know if you say the wrong thing or you're heckling and you're going to get thrown out, you just ruined your own day, not just the player's day. I think that's part of it. I mean, again, I told you I have a lot to say about this. I think that it's, you know, guys, young guys who are trying to get their social media clips to go viral. Remember back in the day when it was like the Howard Stern show, people would say Baba Booey. That was Howard Stern's producer. And they would put it on Howard's radio show on Monday and Tuesday. And they, you know, all of these audio clips. It's the world we're living in. Unfortunately, it is. But again, I think that with the USGA's lead, it can be turned around. You know, the PGA Tour didn't do us any favors. You know, when they created stadium golf, how about out in Arizona at the Waste Management? When they created literally the stadium, all of a sudden they created a stadium. They created group mentality. You know, someone has a hole in one and everybody throws their beer onto the fairway. It's the sport has changed for the better and it's changed for the worst. I just don't want it to go too much further. And I want the governing bodies to get control of this and set examples of people that are not doing the right thing. And I think removing people from tournaments should be done more often.
Absolutely. I know the USGA did remove, you know, some of the hecklers at Shinnecock during the US Open. But as one of the officials said, we can't remove like the whole stadium or all the grandstand because there were so many people heckling. It was just terrible. But, you know, getting back to Eamon Lynch of the Golf Channel, he did say in quotes, Long Island golf fans are stain on the game of golf. Now, I'm not from Long Island. I'm originally a Midwesterner like yourself. I'm from Ohio, but living, you know, on the east end of Long Island for many, many years now, all the golfers that I know are some of the most knowledgeable, most respectful, most passionate golf fans in the world. So for him to say that, I just think was so wrong. And I do take exception to it. And I didn't even grow up on Long Island, but it's just not true. How can they prove that the people, you know, at Bethpage during the Ryder Cup and the people, you know, at Shinnecock are from Long Island? And if they are, they can't prove it, but they don't belong at golf events, as you say. They're not serious fans, and there has to be some kind of policy in place to get them out and to prevent them from coming in the first place.
I mean, I agree with you. I don't know anybody that went to the U.S. Open, and I run five, now six golf courses on Long Island. You cannot tell me that those were Long Islanders. Those were outsiders coming in and making trouble. And I'm going to tell you, with all the sports betting that's going on, I'm not so sure these young kids, and that's primarily who it was, don't have ulterior motives. They're screaming and they're trying to affect the outcome of a game because they've got money on that game. So, you know, there's a lot of dynamics here. But again, it's not the purists. It's not the golfers of Long Island. It's the outsiders that are coming in with ulterior motives. I think that there should be less alcohol sales at these tournaments. If you want the crowd to be quiet, then sell less alcohol. But that isn't going to work for the USGA or the PGA of America or the PGA Tour because they rely on those alcohol sales as part of their revenue stream. So they've got a problem. I think it can be fixed. Just don't blame Long Islanders for it. You just can't. If this US Open was somewhere in Los Angeles or somewhere else, it would have been happening because it wasn't the Long Island people at the tournament. It was the people who traveled from other states and other countries that went to the tournament.
I felt very bad for Bethpage Black last year during the Ryder Cup and in the aftermath of the Ryder Cup because all the attention from that Ryder Cup was really dominated by the headlines of the unruly crowds at Bethpage. And I just thought Bethpage got such a unnecessarily negative rap. Of course, I'm so against any kind of behavior that is not, you know, the most appropriate and the most mannerly. But I just thought, you know, it's so unfortunate with all the hard work you and your team put in and everybody who worked so hard to have that Ryder Cup, you know, at Bethpage Black. And I just, what has the aftermath been at Bethpage Black, Kelly, since the Ryder Cup and all that attention was on, you know, the hecklers and you know, the negativity?
Well, it was so unfortunate. And believe me, no one was more embarrassed than I was. No one was more embarrassed than the people that work every day at Bethpage. It was ugly. Again, I know that this sounds like an excuse. No heckling is right. But if you look at all the social media clips, it was only like five or six people. It was just the same clips that kept going viral in different with different channels. So, but, you know, personally, all I do there is I run the golf range, the pro shop, the cart operation, the caddies and the instruction. I really didn't have much to do with that tournament. And I got hate mail from a lot of private messages on social media from a lot of Europeans. And my response was, I feel for you. I feel it. I am embarrassed also, but you can't blame Bethpage, Long Island, New York for this. It's just not the case, you know? So you can blame, there are a lot of people to blame that it wasn't stopped sooner, probably, but you can't blame the staff at Bethpage for sure. I think it's quieted down. Now all of a sudden it's, you know, everyone's talking about it again because we had two major events in less than a year on Long Island. So, but I promise you, if this event was at the waste management course, probably it would have been the same kind of heckling because it is people travel from all over the country to go to this. It just so happens that we had two tournaments in less than a year that were majors and the whole world was watching.
Do you think because Eamon Lynch has such a big platform, and I was today, he was at the press conference, you know, that Brian Rolapp gave in the PGA Tour talking about the new competitive model for the PGA Tour in 2028. And everybody who came up to him expressed that they agreed with him. And I'm standing there thinking, what? It is insane. They're just agreeing with him because of his large platform. I just think it's, you know, it's clickbait, Kelly. He says these kinds of things. It's all clickbait.
Absolutely.
And it's wrong. It's just, it's putting out the wrong messages out there. I mean, instead, I think spend more time, as you were talking about, trying to, you know, come up with solutions that these governing bodies can put into effect even before the championship occurs, where we're not going to see that. You know, limit the alcohol sales, ramp up security and have a zero tolerance for any of that kind of behavior.
Zero tolerance. You know, it's unfortunately did that, but he's trying to get his 15 minutes of fame. I mean, I know he's on TV all the time, but he's just trying to be provocative. That's what his job is to be. I wouldn't want to be him if he comes to Long Island anytime soon. If he comes to the PGA Championship, I would not want to be him. He's not going to be able to go to a restaurant because Long Islanders are loyal people. They're not hecklers. They're not bullies, but they are loyal and they protect their own. And as a Long Islander, I think I would be very upset if someone lumped me into a category as a bully and one of those people. Again, everybody is embarrassed by the behavior. Everyone is. He's right. It's unacceptable. But you cannot then bully Long Islanders and make terrible statements. You're acting just as bad as the bullies that were bullying Wyndham Clark at that point.
Good points, Kelly Brook. Let's move on quickly to the KPMG Women's PGA Championship at Hazeltine, Minnesota. It is the most lucrative event in women's golf. The purse is now $13 million. The winner will take home $1.95 million. And since Nelly Korda has been on the tour, the prize money has tripled in those 9 years since Nelly Korda started playing golf. So what are your thoughts about, you know, where we are in the women's game at this point?
Well, I think the women's game is growing. You know, who started this whole movement was Mike Wan, who's now with the USGA. I'm sorry that we lost him. Our new CEO is doing equally well, if not better. I think it's growing. We've got a tremendous, a long way to go, but you're seeing it in all sports. You know, it started with it started really with soccer, I think, and with the Women's World Cup team and the WNBA. I think that there's still a very big gap between, but I'm a female, you're a female. I run businesses. It all comes down to profit and losses. You know what? If you don't get sponsorships, you're not going to get prize money. It's as simple as that. It's a very tricky conversation to have. The money has to come from somewhere. So I think that the LPGA right now is being very, very creative, and they're using other methods, and they're getting the players more exposure. I mean, I know when I watch the Olympics, I love watching those vignettes about the curler who has some crazy fun story, because then I'm going to watch curling. So the LPGA recognizes this, and they're making their players a lot more relatable, likable, and they're giving them the exposure off the course that they need to drive interest in women's golf.
And it certainly does help, don't you think, Kelly, when Nelly Korda wins? I mean, it's almost like the entire country, you know, focuses on her, and she's the one. I don't know if she wants to be the spokesperson for the LPGA. She's, you know, somewhat private and shy. But, I mean, she's handled it beautifully since she won the U.S. Open. She's getting the U.S. Women's Open. She's getting so much great attention. She did a tour in New York City last week. But is it too dependent on Nelly Korda to be the star?
It is a little bit. I mean, this is going to be very controversial, what I'm about to say, because the LPGA has fought against this view for so long. But the average golfer thinks that the LPGA Tour is made up of Koreans and some Chinese that are right off the boat that don't even speak English. And that is just absolutely not the case. Most of the girls on the LPGA Tour are American-born. English is their first language. Just because they might not look like Nelly Korda does not mean that they are not marketable. It doesn't mean that they're not relatable. It doesn't mean that they can't give an interview in the press room. The perception, I think, is changing, but it's got a little ways to go.
Interesting that you say that. Yes, but what you're saying about promoting so many, you know, a variety of these women is so important. People have to get to know them and, you know, relate to them in some way, their personal stories, if they can. You know, that certainly helps so that they are interested in following them. And plus, look, network TV contracts are so important. And they just need to get more consistently good times on the networks to showcase the product.
Well, I think that Mike Wan started that again. You know, he got equality on the Golf Channel. I think the women are being seen much more often on NBC. I think that it's working out very well. I think that it's on a very good trajectory at this point, and I'm excited for the future to see where it goes.
All right, let's talk about your incredible business career. Where did you get the training to manage all these properties?
There's no training that goes along with this. There's no like MBA that I got. You know, in 2003, I won my first contract, which was a federal contract for a driving range and a par three in Brooklyn. And then I won Alley Pond Golf Center, which was the busiest driving range in the country, which was New York City. Then I won Randall's Island Golf Center in 2008. And then I won the state contract for Bethpage Golf, which is a 20-year contract. Then I won Montauk Downs. Then I won Harbor Links. And now Pine Ridge is actually not a municipality. It's a public course, but I actually bought it and we closed on it yesterday. We got the keys. So it was all trial and error. You know, I had to, it's all in the planning. So you have to, they put out an RFP and it's usually, you know, 100 pages long. And then you have to write a business plan. So my first business plan I wrote took me almost a year in 2002. And I learned the business from the inside out. You know, being in the golf business, it wasn't so hard. My dad was an entrepreneur, a business owner. So I was okay with the ups and downs, the roller coaster of it all. I wasn't scared of it. I didn't need to have a secure position like a teacher where I had a pension and a regular paycheck. There's some years, even until recently, I had nothing left in the bank when March came around because winter was so long. And then I build it up and then I spend it all and I build it up. You know, that's the way entrepreneurship is. And you just learn as you go. You know, I think all of business really, outside of finance, where you really have to have a mind for numbers, or a scientist when you really have to, you know, study, or a doctor, all of business is really just common sense and just trying to keep your balance sheet and your profit and loss in a good position. And that takes good, in my case, hospitality, good customer service. You have to have premier facilities. I try to take all of my contracts and I try to make golf not only accessible, but I try to give the public golfers a country club experience. And if you just give a little more than everybody else, you're going to succeed. It's not hard in life. You just have to give a little more than everyone else.
That's great advice, Kelly Brook. What brought a young woman from Iowa to Brooklyn, New York?
Well, I started in New Jersey. So I was playing on the Futures Tour, which was the mini tour in the early 90s. And I said, this is not for me. You know, I was used to traveling either as a junior golfer. I started traveling when I was like 10 or 11 summers with my family. And then I went straight into college and I had a team behind me. And then I got on the mini tour and I was like, whoa, this is horrible. I'm, you know, doing my own laundry, figuring out how to make the ends meet, missing cuts, which, you know, making no money. And after a year, I said, you know what, I would like to just teach. And that's kind of a little more secure than this. And I really loved the golf swing. I was like literally in love with the golf swing, the mechanics of it. Butch Harmon was my teacher growing up and he taught me so much. And I just said, I'm going to teach this for a living. I'd like to be in my bed every night, have a dog, have a normal life like other people. So I started as a teacher. And then in 1993, I put on an index card that I wanted to own my own facility by the time in 10 years. And I then kind of reverse engineered it where I said, all right, in order to own my own facility, I'm going to have to get experience in this. I'm going to have to volunteer for this. I'm going to have to learn that. And I basically put mini goals in, kind of, you know, like interim goals that would get me to my long-term goal. And I won my first contract literally 10 years from the date of writing on that index card.
Wow. I love your story. I love your success. Continue to shine, my friend. Kelly Brook, LPGA professional, businesswoman extraordinaire. Congratulations on purchasing Pine Ridge Golf Course and keep rooting for Long Island. I mean, you know, good people live on Long Island, right?
Good
and you're
people.
And you're one of them. Thanks so much.
Thank you. You too, Anne.
Thank you.
Support for this program comes from Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 28th, TPC River Highlands, travelerschampionship.com for more information. My thanks to Keith Stewart, to Kelly Brook, and to my good sal in production. As Winston Churchill once said, success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It's the courage to continue that counts. Have a great week, and I look forward to talking with you next time right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.